your cell phones and other electronic devices. Thank you. Again, my name is Arisa, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Arisa.
This is an open meeting of the Beacon Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting, declining outside contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institutions. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and to help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The Beacon Group insists on providing a safe and effective meeting place so all who wish to may recover from alcoholism. Therefore, we ask all attendees to foster a secure and welcoming environment, refraining from any behavior that may compromise another's safety. As our traditions remind us, our common welfare is paramount. Each member of Alcoholics Anonymous is but a small part of a great whole. For more information about safety in AA, see the AA safety card and safety in AA, our common welfare. Please join me in the serenity prayer.
God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
Thank you. Ethan will read the steps.
The 12 steps. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, we made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood them. 4, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, we made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, we made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, we continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Tonight is anniversary night. And as such, we will be honoring our celebrants at the start of the meeting. Tonight, we have 3 celebrants. Would the celebrants all please join me up at the front? We take this time each month to recognize group members as they mark milestones in their sobriety. It is our belief that pausing in gratitude for these milestones provides hope and inspiration and also fosters love and support for one another. We do ask everyone to keep in mind the number of celebrants and the time of the end of the meeting. It is the group conscience that celebrants try to limit their shares to a minute or so. And now please join me in singing Happy Anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, dear celebrants. Happy anniversary to you.
Okay, it looks like maybe we only have 2 of our celebrants tonight. So, I'm going in under the iPad here. Our first celebrant then, with 4 years, is Sarah.
I am just so grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be up here with my sponsor too. I'm grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't believe it's been 4 years. There was a time not too long ago where I couldn't even get 4 hours. And I mean, what can I say? This year has been pretty amazing. There's been so much growth. I'm happy some friends are here to celebrate. And it's just, you know, everything I have is because of Alcoholics Anonymous, like absolutely everything. And yeah, I'm just super grateful if you're new, if you're checking us out, get a big book, get a sponsor, do the steps, get into service, and just see what happens. Thanks.
Hey, Joe.
Chris on Zoom from our porch in Martha's Vineyard, enjoying the house while we're up there. You know, this was my first time celebrating at the group. My previous anniversaries, I celebrate at the same group every single year, and this last year has been rough. It's been amazing, but it's been rough. And I was looking for a new home group, and the Beacon Group welcomed me in. And I'm like super grateful for that, man. I'm super grateful for like what I found here at this group, and the people here in this group, and like the good AA's set of members of this group. And it was like it was a dark time when I came here, and like I said, you guys welcomed me in, and I got through it because of this group, right? And like groups don't get drunk, you know. And there's like a lot more to that, but like having a home group has been like the foundation of my sobriety since the day I got here. And I have some friends in the room tonight from out of town. I get some friends in the room who've known me since the day I got here. I have my wife here, right? And it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm super grateful for that. And that's it.
Thank you. Because of tonight's celebration, the format of tonight's meeting is only one 10-minute speaker, followed by our main speaker, who will speak for 30 minutes. All of our meetings, are recorded and accessible on our website, beacongroupaa.com. We support AA's statements of unity and anonymity, and therefore ask all of our speakers to identify by first name only and to refrain from using profanity. And tonight, now our first 10-minute speaker is Jesse. Woo!
Hi everyone, my name's Jesse. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jesse.
Thank you so much for asking me to speak this evening, and everyone for being here. Congrats to our celebrants. I'll just start simple. My sobriety date is April 16th, 2021. I have a home group that's Hymns of Serenity at Emmanuel Church on Monday nights. I have a sponsor. She knows she's my sponsor. We talk almost daily, and I've been through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I say those things because those were all suggestions people made for me when I came in here. And my sponsor often says the idea of, you know, there are no rules in AA, but there are suggestions, and it's also a suggestion that if you're jumping out of an airplane, you should grab a parachute. So, yeah, so I think I'll keep following those suggestions. And I was kind of reflecting a little bit on, I know I was going to be speaking here tonight, and it reminded me of just something that came up this weekend. My sponsor and I were having a check-in. She's down in Florida, so I have a long distance person, and she had just made a comment. She's like, you know, let's do a program review. Like, let's take a program inventory this Sunday when you call. So we'll talk a little bit longer. We'll do a program inventory. And she meant that in the sense, like, let's go over, like, the basics of, like, AA. Like, what does your meeting attendance look like? How are you being of service? You know, meditation, prayer, all of those things that fellows in AA have taught me. And immediately in my head, I hear performance review. I hear audit. I hear you're not good enough. I hear I'm concerned about you. I hear intervention, which I'm sure some of us are familiar with. And like for me, like that's my alcoholism. none of that was said. This is one of like the safest relationships I have in my life, my sponsor. And she simply, you know, is trying to have like a check-in with me to make sure I'm doing okay in AA and where can I grow and keep expanding. And for me, like that sums up my alcoholism, definitely in the sense, you know, it's like those fears come up immediately for me, the self-centered fears, the validation, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, am I in trouble? Am I doing enough? Can someone tell me I'm enough? You know, just all of those things. Immediately, you know, she's gonna leave me. This is actually a check-in to tell me she's gonna leave me. I'm not doing enough. You know, the abandonment comes up. And, you know, luckily these days I have, you know, I try and practice a pause so I can let God come in, and I was able to just kind of pause for a minute and remind myself, this is my sponsor, this is someone who cares about me, and I don't need to spend the next 24 hours anticipating a phone call with one of the people that I know cares about me the most in my life. And one of the things that came out of that check-in or like program inventory was, and I think it speaks to like how we sometimes share like what it was like, what happened, what it's like now, like experience, strength, and hope. And one of the things that came out of that reflection was thinking how my prayers have evolved through getting sober, staying sober a little bit, and like what they look like now. So I figured I would kind of maybe try and frame it in that sense. I can definitely tell you when I got here, I felt completely broken. I definitely was, you know, more like the foxhole prayer type. Felt totally called out when people would talk about, before coming to the program, they're like, higher power, I choose to call mine God. It was like a genie. And that was how I was living my life. I would get myself in horrible situations, I would hit the panic button, and I'd be, you know, just saying those prayers, like, God, can you please get me through this meeting? Can you please not let me shake on camera? Can you please help me just like get through this, and I promise I'll stop drinking, you know, all of those things that we kind of tell ourselves. And it was miserable. And I think that speaks to like, that was the relationship I had with the higher power. You know, I was the friend that called only when they want something or there's disaster. And realistically, that's how I showed up for my family and my friends too. And, you know, as I, you know, started walking through the steps with my sponsor and coming to meetings, like everything I know about AA, I learned here from everyone else. I started kind of changing my prayer to this idea of like, God, can you please go in the room first? Because I was in so much fear when I came here, like so much self-centered fear. The fact that I'm even sitting up here right now is like, that is remarkable. That is an absolute sign that I've had a psychic change. That's a promise that's coming true for me. And so I think like, you know, about like 6 months, a year into the program, I would just have this prayer, I'd be like, God, just please, please go in before me. You know, and I would just, and I used to ask people that when I, you know, was in my active alcoholism and that sort of thing, like, can you go in the room before me? Or like, you know, just that reliance on the other people. And then slowly, I think over like the last few months, and I think hitting like the 2 year mark, my prayers have definitely changed to God, help me see you, because the longer I get to stay sober, which I do consider like the biggest gift in my life, God has always been around. It's whether or not I can see him or see it, and it's up to me to number one, stay sober so I can feel that connection. And it's like, as you know, as people say, it's like an inside job. And I think I just lost my train of thought a little bit. So yeah, it's definitely changed into like this idea of like, God, like, please let me see you. And it just reminds me of, I heard someone say, because fear is a huge part of my story. Fear is why I drank. I didn't even know I was in fear. It was like so deep. And that's why alcohol, I think, was my solution for so many years. Kind of dissolved that feeling, is everything that the big book talks about. You know, it was transformative. I didn't know I was having a spiritual experience with alcohol, but I definitely was. And So like, God going before me, and then it moved to God, help me see you, and then this idea, great, okay, that's where I was. So this idea of fear, and someone put it in the context of fear can be a measurement tool of like how far you've gone away from God. So outside of this, I'm a researcher. I love measurements. I love indicators. Any type of tools that can get kind of literal really help me. And so if I think about fear in terms of like the distance between me and my higher power, that really helps me so I know like how to get back on track. And it's all these tools that people have taught me throughout the program, like meditation, prayer, talking to other fellows, all of these things that I had no idea how to do before coming to the program. Also, this is just kind of a side note, but I love the slogans in AA. Like, I'm definitely one of those people, I know they can be cheesy, but I love them. And I had a fellow call them finger foods the other day, which I thought was a really funny reference, because it's just like little things to like snack on, and I love snacks. So it was like, oh, all these like little slogans, and they're kind of just like little snacks that you can grab onto when you need something. And I think it definitely, like those little slogans come up. I think one that I heard this week that I really relate to is, these days I think with my feet. Like, I have to act my way into right thinking, and I cannot think my way into right acting. I think I got that right. That was another like slogan that I learned when I got here, and I was very much related to that. So I think, you know, it's definitely, I'm someone that, I don't think like the obsession to drink lifted automatically. Like, I'm not that type of alcoholic, but that's okay. I've learned that I can keep practicing these tools, and as long as I put myself in the right place, if I'm going to a meeting every day, just these practical things, if I'm surrounding myself with other fellows, trying to do the next right thing, involving other people, like I, with the help of others and God, like I can stay sober. And that is remarkable considering I used to be a round-the-clock drinker. Like, I would drink just to open my email in the morning. I couldn't do anything without alcohol. So I'm gonna wrap up soon. I think I'll end with this. Last night there's also this idea of like, when I was drinking, I always felt this like insatiable, like nothing was ever good enough. I was never good enough. I couldn't get enough. I also relate to the one like, 1,000 will never be enough. One is too, one is not enough. 1,000 will never, whatever. That one. Sorry. Just botched that. But I was driving home in my car, gift of sobriety, and I had just taught 2 Pilates classes. Again, huge gift of sobriety. The fact that I even work out is insane. These are all things I've built out of being sober and continuing to live this way. And I actually had like that feeling of peace where like, this is enough. And I was so connected in that moment. And that doesn't happen for me, you know, all the time or even necessarily every day. But just that wave of like total serenity came over me, and I was like, this is enough. Like, I'm not thinking about one other person that I want here. What else can I do this evening to feel better? It was just like absolute serenity, and I've only ever been able to do that with the help of AA. So I think that's it. That's my time, and thank you so much for having me. I'm Jessie, I'm an alcoholic.
We will now observe the 7th tradition. AA has no dues or fees for AA membership, but we do have expenses. The 7th tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's expenses, the 7th tradition is essential at every level of AA service. AA's usual suggestion is a $2 contribution per meeting. We are passing the basket, but you may also observe the 7th tradition digitally on Venmo. For those of you in person, you will see a QR code in the basket. For those online, I'll try to get a QR code on the screen. I don't think of it. Our Venmo handle is @BeaconGroup. Again, although there are no dues or fees for AA membership, we do have expenses. Our rent is $400 per month. Please give what you can and see our treasurer, Megan, with any questions. We thank you in advance for your generosity. AA also has a set of traditions which apply to the group in the same manner as the 12 steps apply to the individual. Tonight, Haley has been asked to read the 12 traditions.
One, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends on AA unity. Two, For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those who serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never to be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity of the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you so much.
Beacon Group is run by business meeting, which meets on the third Wednesday of each month immediately following the speaker meeting, both here at Temple Beth Zion as well as online. This is your opportunity to get more involved. All group members are encouraged to attend and participate. We hope you can join us. Will all group members please raise their hands? All right, and now let's welcome our main speaker, Trey.
My draw can boom, so I'm going to try not to blow out y'all's AV here, but I'll look and see if I'm getting too loud. My name is Trey V. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Trey.
My sobriety date is July 31st, 2006. My home group is the Turning Point Men's Meeting in San Antonio, Texas, where I live. I'm originally from Austin. Thank you, Jesse, for your share. Congratulations, Sarah and Joe, and thank you for having me out to speak into your meeting. It's an honor to be asked to speak anywhere, and it's really an honor to be asked anywhere. It wasn't always the case. I grew up in Austin, Texas, and I grew up in a family. I had a good shot at life. There was a lot of booze in my family, but they were able to have careers, get degrees, go to jobs, and certainly weren't going to jail and ending up homeless and those things, and that wasn't the case for me. I wasn't physically abused any more than your average Texas boy back in the 80s. And that wasn't the case. So, like I said, there was a lot of booze in my family, and I, in the second step of the 12 and 12, it talks about the outstanding characteristic of alcoholics is defiance, and that was the case with me and what they found with me and trying to bring me up and deal with me as I always took this defiant way, and I always am also that sensitive alcoholic, the less than or better than, never adequate, never accepted, just one or the other. Not good enough or too good, and it led to a lot of struggles between my family and me, my sisters and me, and but when they would try to get me on that straight path, they were met with a lot of, I was real hard to deal with from an early age, and I didn't get drunk for the first time like at a party or by chance. I planned it out. I had very much been a student and observer of the way that they dealt with their issues, which was to drink. And I knew somehow that, I was attracted to that. And so one time when I was at the house by myself, I went to their bar, and I think I was like 13 years old, and grabbed a bottle of whiskey, and I drank until I got sick. and I couldn't wait till I did it, could do it again, and I started doing it regularly. I'd wait till they go to sleep, and I would drink by myself, and pretty soon I wanted to have some friends to drink with, so the consequences began right off the bat, where I was starting to bring neighborhood kids, drink, and had to pick them up and carry them and leave them on their parents' doorstep, and people started showing up at the house. That was 13 and 14, and I never, I never drank, quote unquote, normally. Like, it was always for oblivion. I was always drinking as long as there was availability or there was a way to get availability until there wasn't any left. And so, by the time I was 14, 15, there were problems at home, and they were trying desperately to do whatever they thought was best with me. I got kicked out of a couple private schools, and they sent me back to the school with the kids I grew up with, and it didn't take long for me to find a reason. I had some drama at school, and instead of just going home and saying, hey, I can't really go to school tomorrow, because I'll get beat up, I said, I hate you. And I had them sign me over to my sister at the age of 14, and I left Austin for the country town of Lago Vista, Texas. And I was out in the sticks, and my sister was older than me, had a family, and I was living on her couch. But, in my eyes, I was out of the house and was on to find the people that could give me what I want. I didn't last very long. Caused a lot of chaos in that house with their young family, and so they allowed me to keep a legal guardianship or address, but I moved in with the type of adults that were in their 30s and 40s that would live with a teenager that of questionable character, and I grew up that way, in my teen years. Manipulated the school system. Is a country school out in Texas, so that you get away with a little bit more than I think you could now, but they had like this module program that my friend's mom was a teacher of, and so I manipulated my way into that where I didn't even have to go to school, and I got great A's and B's. So I thought that was great when I'm 16 and 17 and wanting to drink and do what I was doing every day, hustling, but later on when I get to college and don't know algebra and stuff like that, it was a bit of a problem. And that's just kind of the indicator of how it went. So I was out of my family's life. Things went sideways where I couldn't maintain apartments and things like that that weren't in my name, and I couldn't get them in my name because I was a minor. So I ended up homeless and living in my truck out in the woods. And that's by choice. Like, I could go home at any time. I could pick up the phone at any time and call Dad and say, I need to come home. But instead, in order to drink the way I wanted to drink, I lived in the woods, I would get stuck, people would be embarrassed, people have to come and tow me out, this is the way that I was living. And that's just where my alcoholism takes me, and there wasn't anybody in my family really that was like that. I started having major consequences with law enforcement. The week after I turned 17, I got my first DWI, and I got arrested 3 times that month, and so my family had to enter back into my life, and that's when I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous for the first time. I was court ordered to go, and I went. I didn't think anybody was there to get sober. I thought everybody was there to get their sheet signed, and so I managed that, and I ended up, over the next 9 years, I was steadily either, I was in the system somehow, usually a combination. I was either in jail, had warrants out that I was dodging, on probation, or a combination of the three. And, but I did manage to, during that period, finagle my parents into helping me and getting, they were there to serve me and serve my alcoholism and continue to be there when everything hit the fan. I didn't have any other options to work out. So that's what my alcoholism looked like. I was you know, I would hold little, you know, I would hold jobs for small amounts of time, but they're always jobs where I could use and drink and like bartending and things that went along with it. I was just in that life. So that's what it looked like. At the age of 23, I'd been in and out of, you know, college, mostly withdrawing and keeping the funds and not really getting credits, but I was like pretending to be a college student. And I had finally gotten washed out of another university. And I found my last two friends that had anything to do with me. Well, my world was real small because of my alcoholism and the way that I drank, even at that young age where I think that, you know, I think that I knew I was excessive, but I thought it was something normal. I thought that's what everybody wanted to do, and it wasn't. And so I had these two friends that took me in, and I lived on their couch for 3 years. And I was nice to them when they were partying, and when they weren't, I was judgmental in telling them how they needed to live their life. And that went on for as long as I could until they finished school, and I came home, and I had gotten arrested a couple more times, and those were pending, and I had a second DWI, and I came home, and all my belongings were in garbage bags in the garage, and I was found myself homeless again. At this point, you know, when I had been in jail the last time, I had called my mom, or I had the bail bondsman call my mom and my sisters, and they all had said, just leave him there. And my dad didn't hesitate. I hadn't talked to him or seen him. I you know, kept him, shut him out for a few years at that point. And he came, and, you know, he came and he got me. And so I was back, I was homeless again. I couldn't get a checking account in my name. I couldn't get an apartment in my name. I was facing these charges. I had warrants out. And as smart as I think I am and think I was out of options. And so called Daddy, and I told him, you know, over the last decade, if I went back to San Antonio within a year or so, I could graduate college, I could face these charges, if you would just help me out this one more time. And he told me no, you know, and but he later came back and he said okay. And my attorney said that you might go back to Alcoholics Anonymous, it might help you with your case, and I think you have a problem. This is a guy that I partied with. And I was kind of offended that he would suggest that I had a problem, having seen him in such a condition. And so I moved to San Antonio. And, you know, I didn't get sober right away, but I went to meetings. That's the one thing I was doing of value. My world was so small. Like, I had nobody left. Nobody in San Antonio wanted anything to do with me. My friends were nil. You know, I had a relationship with my father, and it was at the end, and that was it, and I was out of outs. I couldn't figure out how all the things were going to work out, and I was losing hope. And so I called Central Service Office, and they sent me to a clubhouse that's in San Antonio that's more of an older clubhouse. And I was in my 20s, and I went, and it was a small group that everybody had to read, because there was only a handful of people. And so I would choose the promises, and they just sounded so absurd given what I was facing. And if I couldn't figure out how this thing would work, and I was familiar with the program from all the outpatient treatment and court-ordered experience, and the biggest hang-ups I had too, because I wanted to believe, but I just couldn't understand how it worked, right? And the two things that will hold me up is that I couldn't understand the steps, because the steps are really counterintuitive to everything in the way that my alcoholic mind works. You know, it's the reason that it works is because it's counterintuitive to this mind that can't differentiate the truth from the false that I listened to for years. And it's the only perspective I listen to. I would shake my head and nod while people talked, but until I was ready and willing, I only listened to myself for all of those years. And I didn't realize how insane I was. You know, it helped me survive for the, you know, all of these things that I had seen, like I felt like I'd overcome, and I knew my life was unmanageable, but, you know, it's really hard when it's, you know, it's all that you've depended on to keep you going and keep you getting the things that, you know, are your survival skills in alcoholism, and to let that go felt terrifying. And the other one is, you know, I knew about the amends process, and my two biggest amends were graveside amends, or, you know, were people that had passed, and I didn't understand how I could ever make those two issues right. And, you know, I'd heard about graveside amends, so I wasn't willing, and I was terrified of giving this program a chance, because, like, you know, one, even at rock bottom and with no outs left, I was so arrogant of, if, you know, I can't figure it out, you know, what hope could I possibly have? And so I went to meetings and I drank in meetings, and I continued to go, and like my first drunk, I planned out my last drunk, or my, you know, when I picked up my most recent desire chip 17 years ago, I planned it out. I went to the Thirsty Turtle and set out to get drunk by myself, and get drunk I did. And the next day I went in and I raised my hand at that group and asked for a desire chip. And my friend Bill S. would say, "That was a Monday." And I just hadn't looked the world in the eye for so long, the way that I had lived, the things that I had done, and just was so, like, terrified of not drinking. And if I had had one more out, I may not have gotten sober. Like, I had no hustles where I could ever see, because I had given up, like, everything being all right a long time ago, right? At this point, I'm just trying not to create more fires, and I was failing miserably at that. Like, you know, no matter what, even if I was able to stay out of trouble for a little bit of time, even if I was able to even drink lightly for a little bit of time, there was no doubt in my mind that at some point I was going to get insanely drunk and burn whatever bridges I had again. Like, that, the idea didn't exist for me that I could at some point ever drink normally. So I had step one, you know, I believe I understood step one and had accepted step one, but I was terrified of the thought of having to face this life without alcohol and everything that I had felt I had done. So I thought that I needed a sponsor. I was young. I thought I needed someone young that was going to beat up on me and make me feel bad for all of my stuff. And they assigned me Tommy B, who was not young, and him and his wife Nina would have me over, and they just loved me. And, you know, we worked the steps in that summer of 2006. And so, again, getting back to step two, you know, I had a problem, you know, the arrogance and the ego of thinking of how smart I am and not being able to comprehend what you were talking about in the steps was jaunting. And what I'm trying to say is that I'm proof that, you know, if you put everything into this program with somebody that you know has worked the steps, and you're willing to go to any lengths and work a thorough program, believing that it will not work for you, believing that it will fail, waiting for it to fail, it can work for you too. Because that's what I did, you know. This, I had given up, and before giving up, what I was going to do is I was going to be the best AA. I was going to do everything that you told me to do, and I expected it to fail. And it hasn't, you know. And at 30 days, my life had already started to change for the better, and I didn't find a reason sufficient enough to drink, and so it's turned into 17 years. That being said, you know, I arrived here, and that defiance of, I will take in what you have to say, but in the end, the decision is to be mine, right? right? And not understanding that this brain that had what I was telling, I'm a salesman, right? I'm a great salesman. And half my brain sells nonsense and the other half buys it all day long. All day long, I'm my best customer. And I had to be shown that, like, I was so convincing of this stuff that just wasn't real over and over again. And that came through, you know, a thorough inventory and being shown the patterns of how it showed up again and again and again, that I had convinced myself of these things that just weren't real. And the only way that I have found long-term, and, you know, it's been a process. It's a process of where, you know, we regress and maybe we come back. But today, you know, at my core, I don't have to do my fifth step with the group or with the audience or with everybody out there, but I have to be absolutely honest with my sponsor who works a program and is active in this, in his recovery, and I have to be absolutely honest. Now, I have a group of guys that I can be absolutely honest with, and if I'm hiding, when I start to, like, say this isn't that bad, or I don't need to tell on myself, or I run the risk of running it back through this bad sales cycle of me justifying a lot of stuff and saying it's not that big of a deal, and slowly those grow. And when I get away with it, it's not like, oh, I got away with that, I need to go back to AA and get right. I start pushing the line further and further. And I don't know, and I have no guarantees of where that's going to lead me. And I've had experience with that in recovery and slipping away. And I've seen it with people that have had long-term sobriety that, you know, have been foundations in my recovery and then, have lost sobriety at points. What I'm saying is that, you know, I would listen to people come into AA and say, and come back from going out and say, well, I stopped going to meetings, I stopped doing service work, and I never thought that would be me, right? Like, I love AA, and service work taught me how to be a functional human in AA and have relationships with other people and then go out and have this huge life. I told you how small my life was when I got here. I had a little bit of a relationship with my dad, and that was it, and had been living not in a great way. And, you know, in recovery, I've gotten to be a part of, and that's because of my experience in doing service work and the steps that have taught me how to relate to other people, to relate to myself, to be a friend, to be a family member and a business person amongst other business people. And it gave me this great big life. And so big that at points I start to, you know, I just didn't want to work in inventory is the bottom line. I stepped away I had this long list of things that I had done in recovery, and I wanted to take a victory lap, and I stopped doing the things that gave me this big life, and and I just felt like I could live on yesterday's sobriety. And what happened is what I didn't think would happen is that, you know, I stopped going to meetings, I stopped working with a sponsor, I started telling myself, only taking my own advice, which is bad advice, and it gets worse and worse every day that I do it. And I stopped being honest when things were going on with my, with my mind. And so, two or three years, and COVID didn't help, right? Like, I didn't, you know, it gives a reason to not go to meetings for me as well. And so I came back 15 months ago with only a dry date. I was still at the same, I hadn't drank, but that was it. And I found somebody that I could be completely honest with and went through the steps again this year and had another spiritual experience, just like it tells us we're going to, right? And again, I had that feeling that I came in to sobriety with, which is, you know, I had a God, I thought that I had to be good before God was going to have anything to do with me. I thought that I was going to have to go from my disease and go out and be good before, and that wasn't going to happen. God had to keep me sober. And I came back that same way, but I found somebody that I trusted that I could be completely honest with. And I went through the steps, and even when everything, you know, felt like it was on fire again, from my experience, I still had the peace and relief of being back in the middle of AA and knowing what this program does with an alcoholic like me. And having, and that was, you know, even when everything was not all right, like the faith that has come from working the steps and helping other alcoholics over and over and over again. And so, you know, I haven't done this in a while, and I'm really grateful to be in the middle of Alcoholics Anonymous today, to be a bozo on the bus. And I've had big service positions in the past, and what I enjoy now is working directly with other alcoholics and helping my home group. I take a meeting into the Cthulhu unit of it's a state prison in Texas once a month, and I try to be a responsible member of Alcoholics Anonymous today. I don't want to ever be in a position where I don't have to, where I feel like I can't look at people in the eye. So I have that group that I trust in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can be completely honest with. And if you don't have that group, I encourage you to do so. I'm happy to be here in person and sober. Thank you so much.
All attendees.